يومك سواك كيف
معك نتوك شراك الفلوبة معك شركة الفلوبة yes. So we have a list of stakeholders who have confirmed that they are going to participate in the hearing. I will just request the committee secretary to give an indication of how many stakeholders and what kind of time allocation.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lola Bhai, the committee secretary. We did circulate the program for today's public hearing. The number of publishing is not that huge. We've got about 11 publishing. Therefore, it is possible that the committee can deal with the public hearing today and finish today. I'll read out the list of the submissions and the organizations that confirm that they're going to come to present before the committee today. Number one, we've got Drug Free Africa. Another person is Christian Gordon. We've got Mr. Hilton James Lenders. He's going to present on his personal capacity. We've got an institution called Middle Village Community Representative Council, represented by Mr. Michael Kosopane. We've got AIDS and Rights Alliance for Southern Africa, represented by Mr. Greg Gonzalez. The CLK Youth Development Board, represented by Mr. Kwanele Loliwe. Mbali Child and Youth Center, by Ms. Wiswa Kondi. Banka, by Ms. Samin Dada. Substance Misuse Advocacy Research and Training, by Mr. Ras Fisher. Healthcare King Center, by Major Lovick. Sultan Bahu Outpatient Treatment Center, by Mr. Shafiq David. And the Chin Challenge Treatment Center, by Reverend Mr. Please show
interest on housing. Will you please proceed to committee room N46 Mark Street? The meeting starts at 9 o'clock. I repeat, all members of housing, will you please proceed to
Each institution has been given 20 minutes to present and interact with the members of the committee.
Okay, I don't know if it's members of the
My name is Warren Whitfield from the Addiction Action Campaign. I would also like to make a verbal submission later on if possible. I didn't do so with my written submission. I didn't indicate my desire to do so. I did do so by email, but it wasn't confirmed afterwards.
All right. I think that there may well be a problem that with the communication. Could you make your written submission available so that we can have a copy from the members and we'll try and find the launch document?
Okay. I did submit the written before the deadline. It was confirmed that it was received. Warren Whitfield from the Addiction Action Campaign. I received the confirmation from Pumla.
Alright. The committee secretary was on leave at that time. So Pumla had to provide by attending. So I think it's still the two of them need to check.
Thank you.
All right. If there's a problem in securing your position, we will request you to make a copy. I'm sure you should be correct. Is there somebody else? If yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David Baylor from Central Drug Authority. We did ask last week for an opportunity to address the House of MP and to make a submission.
If there's time, we want to be expected to do more than make a submission in public guests and to respond to some of the issues that will arise at the public guests at the end of the time. So, but certainly, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right. Good morning, we haven't seen in a long time. How are you? Nice to see you again. See your smile. All right. Some part of your furniture you've been here to
report to.
You don't have the furniture. All right. Okay, we're going to proceed now. Is there any further preliminary issues before we proceed? Ms. Samu, let the presenter come closer in the
room. Chair, Honourable Weaver, if you don't have the case, if you're coming later, I'm going to tell you what you're
doing. Thank you. Secretary, do you have any other comments?
Yes. Only from, this is from Ed. Elton J. Lambert, Middle Village Community, have it here. I'm just wondering if time for the Middle Village Community. Can you see the floor where we can see you?
anybody who does not have the title of the where is the committee action? Any other member that they raise their hand, I will call for the night.
My name is Matoko Tukwani, I'm the founder and the president of the Village Community Representative Council, established in terms of Section 81 of 1996. I'm with my Secretary General, Mrs. William Kobo. My presentation is as follows. Submission. The prevention of and treatment for substance abuse care, and in short, to combat substance abuse, establish services and programs for prevention of substance abuse, provide for early intervention services by various stakeholders, provide for establishment of community based services, provide for establishment of public halfway houses and registration of private halfway houses, provide for monitoring and assessment of treatment centers and halfway houses, provide for dealing with children addicted. Establish program for aftercare and reintegration services. Comment. The above mentioned bill, prevention and treatment for substance abuse bill, can be implemented by forming a strong working relationship between Department of Social Development, Department of Health, Department of Safety and Security, and community-based organization representing community in that particular area. And it must not be the responsibility for local government to avoid political and unfair discrimination of political affiliates, but promoting employment equity in terms of access after all the efforts taken by the cluster in terms of the transformation team, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development contested decision for prevention of and treatment for substance abuse patients, for our people to access better health for all. Community-based organizations will always be monitoring their access and assessing treatment centers and how they help for the project to be a success. But members of the community-based organization involved in that in the project must be compensated or paid to fight against poverty and job creation for the unemployed people within our local community for better life. With this 2 weeks, I would like to thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that input. Don't leave that seat you're still on the because members of the committee may want to ask you questions on your motion. So this is all you can be an but just to alert other guests, only members of Parliament ask questions. Their job. Let me start with that honorable demander next to you, and then I'll get to the come from there. Correct, Mr. Demander.
So, thank you, Chair. I thank the organization and the presenters for the interest they've shown here and the effort and the good work that they do. Just one question, Chair, of clarity. In their presentation, they are mentioning the exclusion of local authorities. To get clarity whether they don't want the political side of the local authority, or they would be amenable to or be open if it. Push up the administrative side of the municipalities, because check probably it's quite important the infrastructure that the municipality provides and perhaps the capabilities that the local authority might have in assisting in creating resources or providing resources. Thank you.
I think that's a very important one. I also have made a follow-up later on that. Mr. Mkondi.
Okay, no, thank you very much. No, I just want to join my colleagues this month to welcome the presentation from my own organization. I have two questions. The first question you have asked is a question of excluding my local government. What is the rationale to exclude local government in relation to the proposal of involving community-based organizations, because they are at a local level. They are going to operate in a vacuum without the resources, because these organizations are dying for the resources. So if you exclude a local government, aren't you trapping these local community organizations into tasks that are not going to be complete because of the lack of resources? That is the first question. The second question is another question of intervention services. What are those services? They give details of the intervention services. And if we talk about intervention services, who's supposed to be given greater responsibility to deal with it? Because the worry is that everything is always centralized into the national government department. And they take time to be implemented because of the human resource capacity challenge that the government has. So if you speak about intervention services, who should do this, particularly on the local government level? Because this challenge is at local level. That's the second question. Related to that question is the question of community safety. What are these services? If you are saying that we need to make sure that they are community services deemed with the question of sustenance. What are these things? Do you take away these community services from the infrastructure that's already there? For example, we just talk about the blood action committees that are already established at the local council level. And the work needs to be doing is municipality. So if you propose, don't you find the contradictions in terms of the articulation in the presentation?
All right. Any
further
questions from members in council?
Thank you, Chair.
After he has responded, I'll also invite the department and the CBA to give their perspective on this. But first, let me just get the presenter to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By saying not to be the responsibility of local government and municipal councils, not meaning they are excluded from the project, but not 100% to be the responsibility of that day, according to our suggestion.
So you want them as participants but not as the drive as the
lead,
even at local level. And what is the motivation? I see you say in your submission that your concern is political impact. Can you elaborate more on that? What exactly?
Mr. Chair, our problem is as local members is that coming to community projects, we've got a problem, a serious problem at the classroom, whereby when a government launching a community project, some of our councillors are not fair. I'm sorry, but I can talk there in the chat. Some of our councillors are not fair. If one councillor is from a certain political organization, and then you are seeking or you are interested in that particular project, they cannot include yourself because of a political affiliation. So that is a problem.
You've made that point. I don't know if there are other issues that you want to respond to, or that is the main issue.
And then I'm coming to this cluster. We mentioned a Department of Social Development, Department of Health, Department, that is a cluster in terms of helping each other to combat this problem or affecting.
Is your other colleague want you to add anything? Or you covered?
Okay.
You want to ask a follow up? All right.
Thank you for the explanation. You know, I understand from where you're coming as far as recent projects where there is perhaps
my follow up is around the question of the involvement of the local government. In particular, the question of coming here. The presenter don't they think has to avoid the so called protest interference, the strategy of the white committee, to play that role? Because my worry is we will exclude local government, that will be a crisis. So, don't they think to avoid political interference, strengthening of the white committee, won't solve this particular problem and assist in combating
look, I'm going to, once he has responded to this follow up, to clarify what the existing arrangement and what is the proposed. The sample follow up was simply to say she understands that the problem could arise in relation to the situations that involve job opportunities where people tend to benefit financially. But her question is that in relation to substance abuse, it appears that there isn't really money involved, there isn't really, you know, those kinds of material benefits involved. Do you think that even in the case of substance abuse, this political problem that you mentioned would still arise if the councillors or the our deliberations will make a decision whether to take the opposite or to approach the method. But I think this clarifies your position. Don't go and do that. And don't go and approach the method. Can I invite the partners and the CEO, whoever wants to come through? Just to respond and make the decision. What is the current arrangement? How are the local actions and communities constituted? Who participates in the community? And who drives it?
Let me just, I'll just do an initial response and my other colleagues will done my assessment. But I wanted to respond to the question of the inclusion of the local country. I think our problem is that this arrangement for the substance abuse is at that scale of government. And it's going to become difficult for us to say that exclusion. They should not take the lead. Our view is that it's at the 11th of government and they need to take the lead at that level. But it actually does not necessarily mean that other government departments and organizations have been excluded. I think that's what we actually did quite a number of organizations and government departments that have to take part in that committee at that level. So our view is that we cannot really exclude the local government.
There are two different schools of thought around this issue. The one school of thought says, in any case, constitutional social development, including childcare, is a concurrent, let's say, welfare service, a concurrent function. National and the provincial. All right? But either of them can, by agreement, assign or delegate some of the statutory functions to aim and check the capacity to actually. All right? So constitutionally, that's the idea. We, the legislation, actually assign a function and directly to the ministry, which we probably can do by legislation. All right. We have to look at it in the context of that. Right. The way I see the constitution, we need to understand the overload the municipality with every other function from the other field, but selectively target a particular function that would then for which ultimately has really achieved the hope of the constitution. So we must be sensitive to those issues. It's a different issue to an issue where the province is organizing its activities within the province makes a test at the local level. Right? It's something similar, for example, to functions which are exclusively national, like your labor, like your other departments, where, for example, the Department of Labor will have regional offices, which may be occurring in various provinces. Those offices are not provincial offices, but they are national offices, but located in the regional offices. They still stand by the could have a situation where activity is coordinated at a provincial level, but it's taking place at a local level, driven by the province, including various stakeholders, including the municipality. So there are two possible approaches. I'm not saying which of the approaches the committee will eventually adopt. That is the type of case study. Yeah, but I think the issue is just to clarify what the options are and what is the constitutional framework that you need to enter the option. All right. Central Drug Authority or any other official in the department who wants to provide further clarity on this issue, what is the status of it? Yes, I see the hand there. Are you from the
Central Drug Authority?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response, I would just like to clarify the vision that we have within the Central Drug Authority of the functioning of the Local Drug Action Committee and the involvement of the local government in order to assist us. And I think in saying that, we must recognize that efforts in order to combat substance abuse has got to infiltrate right down to the lowest levels, which are the Local Drug Action Committee. And without them, this whole process will not take off and will not have an impact on the community issue we are actually concerned about. So it is vitally important that this issue be addressed, appropriately and that we get the buy-in of all the local action committees and the stakeholders involved. It is absolutely essential that this be given a priority. The vision that we have within the Central Drug Authority is to utilize the local drug action committees, but in order to coordinate the activities, we need to have some responsible party looking after and coordinating the activities at a local level. And that is the reason why we assigned it to the local government, to participate and to be the role players involved in the establishment and also to support the local drug action committees a secretariat in order to ensure that their activities are integrated right down to the lowest level and to give them the structure which is necessary in order to coordinate the efforts at that level. So it's important that we have someone involved. And that is the reason why we chose to use the local government to help with the establishment and to run the structures at that level. It's impossible with 372 local drug action committees in Zizek to be able to do it at any other level other than the people that are right down at the grassroots level. And that is why we needed to have them there. Obviously, what they would do is they would take into account all of the other departments, such as, for example, justice, police, health, and all the other necessary role players. But the coordinating function needs to be taken over by local government at that level. Otherwise, all our efforts will never actually see any recognition being given to the importance that it is. And we as the Central Drug Authority, are dependent on the local drug action committee and the NGOs and everybody at that level to ensure that the programs are rolled out. And to give them that capacity, we are saying that they should be the secretariat, the stakeholders involved using the local government.
Right.
Yes.
Let me just
add
if there are any other officials from the line function of the department who want to add. Yes.
Good morning, Honorable Portfolio Commission, President Smith. My name is Mokot Kalayamuti Mount of the Department of Social Development, Substance Abuse, and the Directorate. The current situation here is that, in terms of the current act, the delegation of power is limited to provinces, and then we are currently in the process of delegating the powers to other provinces. Other provinces have not yet accepted those powers of delegation. So that's the current situation. And then we are, since I came to the government, I've never heard of power being delegated to the local level. Something that might still be needed.
What is the proposed way forward in terms of the model proposed? We understand the current situation, but what is the vision in terms of?
Yeah, the vision in terms of this bill is to decentralize all the services from national level to provincial level and to local level. Okay. And that has been taken according to this bill. So the question raised by my gentleman, I should be able to be taken for. There's no way in which we can work without the involvement of the councillors and then the municipalities, because that is more most projects will be implemented. And then this bill is to create a role for each and every South African not discriminatory. So that is my point.
This local action, are they envisaged to organize at what level a councillor or at the level of the municipality as a whole, where it's even more central, in local terms, highly centralized. But what is the vision? Tony, if you want to make a follow-up on the presentation.
Yeah, on that, two questions.
All right.
Let's say what I'm going to say about the police now. I didn't understand the conversation, okay. But I'm meaning to ask you. You know, in the National Action Plan, I think we need to check it very again. Particularly when we talk about localizing this action. that more power is given to the mayor of that municipality for appointing people. Yeah? Because if you read, the mayor is going, can appoint a representative to sit in a committee, all these things. So why that power is given to the mayor? You know, what is the rationale with that? Why the mayor should be a person who takes a decision, not the school, for example? Why the school did not propose the principal to serve in the committee, but the mayor must endorse? Why? Why is this power? So I wanted maybe to check at those gaps in terms of the establishment. So to find the situation whereby the number of these action committees is not work. They can't function. It might be because of the way it is structured. Or the way it's being programmed. So this power is very important. I'm asking a question for the meeting, not for me. So then I'm going to listen.
No, it's certainly a very useful question. I will take it on board. I think we're going to have to go. Obviously, we do not expect you to provide all the solutions. You've made your point based on the experience of your organization and all the when you made a decision. But I think we'll have to go back to the question. What do you mean by local government? Talking of individual councillors driving it, I see another hand at the back row. Thousand, yes, I have been. You are the acting DG. Oh, sorry, that's fun. Oh, all right, I thought it's Thousand. Oh, sorry. All right. Please pardon me, my vision has limitations. All right, please, I don't know what I'm saying.
I don't know where I'm going. Thank you very much. I think this conception that has been put forward by the presenter, well, to a large degree, needs to look at very, very important. The conception is that things have to be done through counseling. I think one of the biggest problems focused on that. One of the biggest problems is when we have this legislation, we don't look into the structure of local government. We don't look into the power, the systems that are existing. In many, many instances, the biggest problem is that some responsibility without looking structurally at these people are not actually linked to the systems of local government. That creates a lot of problems. And I know that the citizens expect very clearly that the land council department must look into the question of capacity and assisting local government, which they do not do. In many instances, they realize that the local government is spending a lot of responsibility, that they don't have capacity to carry out, and the blame is in the The art structure is not about the counselor. The art structure can be, I think, complicated in one committee. I hear that there are local election committees of staff or staff committees. But this is not related to existing local structures with a more community, like law work committee, and many, many other structures that are there in terms of. It's a misnomer that councillors have a particular political interest in the area. The problem is a structural problem that is pointed out. And I think this bill should look into that aspect and see how does it marry the structural commission to the structural commission. Because the problem is experience as a local government member. That's where the problem is. It's all happening. There's a common sense that's happening. But the actual implementation of programs the actual operationalization of all these things are at that level, where Land Council Department and that leading local government, without even understanding what is the intention of the legislation in the five local government.
Of course, with the further linkage with the department, portfolio committee on provincialism of the government, so to bring those interests there. And perhaps for me, actually, the solution to raise the issue with that portfolio committee, so that we can get some kind of a common perspective on how we should approach it. All right. I know the CDA wants to come back on this issue. But we should also find a balance between over decentralization that results in weakening of coordination. Because you see, one of the biggest challenges that we've observed in our own oversight world is bringing the other parties to the party, especially your other line functions, both at national, some of them at national, and also at the provincial level. Your patient security, your education, your health, to what extent is the White Committee on its own going to have the muscle to bring all the stakeholders on board at that level without the backing of the provincial coordinating national team. So we need to look at not simply dumping the program on one country and hope that somehow because they're down there, they'll have this medical power for someone in the community house in the time. So we really have to deal with this matter very cautiously. And of course, the point has been that if you dump it on the mayor's desk, because they have a thousand other things that they dump them there, but equally, we don't want the situation where local government says, well, this is not our project, we're trying to do it. And tell their councillors, hey, you're wasting your time on things that have nothing to do with us. You know, focus on what we want you to focus on. Forget about that. So we need to find a balance somewhere. We need to get everybody to part how we work planning to invite other departments probably forgot about that because last time they didn't test us a lot. And we still owe us to come back on that other matter that we have chosen. Now we want to get back on the but we'll see what we can do. All right, I think that's as much time we can give to this question. PDA, we'll still have another opportunity to speak in nature. Let's leave it at that. Thank you very much. I think the presentation was quite short, but very thought-provoking. Okay, we're going to proceed to the next presentation. Faith and Right Alliance for Southern Africa. Okay, do we have Mr. Greg on the left? Yeah. All right, please come forward. Please proceed to introduce yourself and your organization and share with us.
Madam Chair, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. My name is Paula Kutijibwe, and I'm here today representing the AIDS and AIDS Alliance of Southern Africa, ARAFA. With me is my colleague, Leslie Orlandal, from the Treatment Action Campaign. We welcome this opportunity to present our submission on this bill, which follows two written submissions from ARAFA in 2007 and in March 2008, both of which have been endorsed by the AIDS Bill Project Action Campaign and the Substance Abuse Advocacy Research and Training Organization. We should all have both of these submissions. Can you just check that everyone has the one from 2007 and the most recent one? The later one refers extensively to the first one, which is now provided to both of them, but the page numbers that we refer to will be from the latest submission.
Can we just confirm which one is the latest?
The latest one is the one, yeah, with the text box at the top. Test B12
2008. All right. Does everybody got that one? Not everybody. Can we, are there extra copies? All right. Let's prioritize numbers, and then we can add the others.
Our technical advisors, Greg Gonzalez from the AIDS and AIDS Alliance of South Africa and Sakina Hassan from the AIDS Bill Project are also present and will be available to answer questions after the presentation. I am going to be speaking on the importance of an evidence-based scientific approach to the prevention and treatment of substance abuse, and Leslie will be discussing the link between substance abuse and other infectious diseases, namely HIV and hepatitis. And the critical need for harm reduction programs with address these things. A primary issue that we raised previously in our first submission and must address again, as it underpins many of our other concerns with this bill, is that it does not adequately recognize and approach substance abuse as a chronic medical condition that requires primarily medical as opposed to penal intervention. Numerous experts in the field, including not least the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, and the World Health Organization, defines drug addiction as a multifactorial health disorder that follows the course of a chronic, relapsing, and remitting disease. National legislation, policy, and program interventions for drug use, substance abuse, should therefore be in line with these recommendations and should reflect this approach. This is the basis for our position to close 72A, as outlined on page 3 of our submission. We submit that a focus on values, perceptions, expectations, and beliefs encourages a moralistic and unscientific approach to prevention programs, which, with all due respect, is misguided and has been shown to be much less effective than an evidence-based scientific approach, the priority of which should be to reduce the personal, medical, public health, and social harms associated with drug use. We have therefore recommended that this priority also be articulated in both 8.1 to strengthen and focus the purpose of prevention programs. Okay, we are. We are on page. I'm referring to our recommendations on page 3 of our submission. At the moment, that's the new submission.
In any case, we do not expect presenters to read word for word because written submission is fair, but to talk to and highlight the exciting aspects of the but yes, certainly we need to know that the way you ask
I'll be talking about the motivation for submission, but I'll also be referring to specific things in the written submission. Currently, I'm referring to on. While we welcome the bill's leaning to treatment and rehabilitation over criminal sentencing, we are also worried by the punitive approach that it endorses towards those who do not prove themselves to be fit for treatment or who are not able to meet the conditions of treatment. Not least because it disregards the principle of the right of the user to informed consent regarding her or his treatment. There is overwhelming scientific evidence to show that while the initial decision to use substances may be based on voluntary will, addiction leads to distinct biochemical changes in the brain, which disrupt the normal processes of cognitive control and in so doing significantly undermine the user's ability to voluntarily cease his or her substance use, which is why one will often observe persistent use of substances, even in the face of negative economic, personal, or health consequences. These biochemical changes last long after cessation of use and long after the disappearance of withdrawal symptoms, and if not properly managed, can trigger a relapse. Page 5 of our submission therefore emphasizes the need to acknowledge this chronic nature of addiction disease. We have submitted that a provision be added to clause 32cc to clarify that relapse shall not automatically constitute a violation of sentencing terms, and that decisions on sentencing, especially for relapsed users, must take into consideration the opinion of a qualified healthcare professional with experience in addiction medicine, as currently the bill only mandates the magistrate to seek the opinion of a social worker, and also must prioritize further treatment, including harm reduction and social services. And my colleague, therefore, will speak further to what these harm reduction and social services should entail. The United Nations Official Principles for Drug Dependence Treatment cautions that attempts to treat and prevent drug use through tough penal sanctions for drug users fail because they do not take into account the neurological changes the drug dependent has in motivation pathways in the brain. Penal sanctions should therefore always be the last resort, should only be applied in instances where the user has proven to be a danger to society. Such instances need to be carefully, rationally, and consistently regulated. We are therefore strongly opposed to the unregulated conferral of extrajudicial powers upon non-law enforcement professionals such as social workers, as allowed in clauses 48 and 48B, which we refer in page 6 of our submission. We submit that these clauses be amended to limit the powers of arrest only to law enforcement officers and only those in possession of warrants for such purposes where the user has proven to be a danger to society. Based on the same argument of the chronic, relapsing, and medical nature of addiction, which, as I have said, is the internationally recognized standard, and bearing in mind that the ultimate goal of rehabilitation, the ultimate goal is rehabilitation as opposed to punishment, we further stress that interventions and services for the treatment of addiction should not exclude users who are unable or unwilling to seek the substance abuse, a principle, once again, that is strongly endorsed by the United Nations. In this respect, we propose on page 5 that clause 27 be amended to explicitly allow for the inclusion of all users, that includes pre-treatment, recovered users, and relapsed users in support services, while maintaining an emphasis on personal health, well-being, and sobriety. In closing, I would like to acknowledge that our recommendations, although they are based on strong scientific principles, do present difficult decisions for this committee to make. The concept of adopting what is likely to be interpreted as a more lenient approach to substance abuse, albeit scientific and evidence-based, is likely to cause discomfort among those who prefer the more traditional approach that promotes societal condemnation of the user. However, as noted by an eminent researcher in the field, we cannot select models of human behavior based on desired social education, but must rely on the scientific evidence that we have. And if our goal really is to improve the health and social well-being of all those affected by drug use, then scientific evidence points unmistakably to the need for holistic programs and policies that do not approach drug users as individual agents of societal ills, but rather as patients of a preventable, treatable medical condition to successful rehabilitation is contingent on our recognizing and responding to them as such. Thank you for your attention. I'm now going to hand over to Lindsay about specific harm reduction activities that we recommend for drug users. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'd just like to thank you again for this opportunity. I will be addressing the following issues regarding the bill. Firstly, the inability of the bill to sufficiently recognise the link between substance use and infectious diseases, especially HIV and hepatitis C, and the absence of key interventions in the bill to prevent and treat substance use and its associated harms, such as syringe exchange programs and substitution therapies. These
recommendations and the background to this are quite extensively outlined on pages 2 to 6 of our first submission, but I'll just be speaking to them, and then in our second submission we make specific recommendations that I'll be referring to throughout the presentation. I'd firstly just like to reiterate what my colleague has been saying. Substance abuse is a chronic relapsing brain disease, and as such should be treated as a health condition where interventions are based on scientifically proven measures. And it's a public health issue, and that should be treated as such. Firstly, the bill, as I've said before, doesn't address the links between substance use and the transmission of infectious diseases such as HIV and hepatitis C. Currently, between 5 to 10% of all HIV infections globally are due to injection drug use, and injection drug use is on the upward trend in South Africa, with around about 8% of substance abuse patients reporting heroin as their primary drug in 2005, the majority of them being in the younger population. A critical concern is that a small study done here in South Africa shows that 20% of injecting drug users are already HIV positive. The emergence of HIV infection in injecting drug user populations is often explosive, and research has shown that a prevalence rate of 30 to 40% is established in the population within the first year. What this means, in other words, is that once the HIV epidemic breaks into a population of substance users, it rapidly increases at a virtually exponential pace. Thus, it's in the public interest that we act preemptively and put measures in place to prevent the rapid spread of HIV in these vulnerable groups. Injecting drug users are not the only group at risk. People with a history of non-injection substance use are also more likely to engage in high-risk sexual activities. 28% of drug users overall are already HIV positive. Thus, HIV prevention programs specifically targeted at drug users are critical, particularly in the context of South Africa's existing and enormous HIV epidemic. In response to this, we strongly recommend on page 4 of our latest submission that the bill include language to address critical harm reduction in HIV prevention services for drug users, an important one of which would be the introduction of syringe exchange programs that should be included in the provisions made in Clause 22 of the bill under the types of outpatient services that the Minister may establish. Injecting drug users become infected and transmit HIV to others through the sharing of contaminated syringes and other drug injection equipment, as well as through high-risk sexual behaviors. Needle sharing also contributes to high levels of hepatitis C, where up to 98% of the population can be infected despite a low prevalence of HIV, potentially leading to serious implications such as psoriasis, loss of liver function, and liver cancer. Syringe exchange programs are critical if we are to address these epidemics in South Africa. It is estimated that an individual injecting drug user injects about 1,000 times per year, creating an enormous need for reliable sources of sterile syringes. Yet there are few services available for injecting drug users in South Africa. This is despite the fact that the effectiveness of syringe exchange programs is well established internationally, recommended by the World Health Organization and UNAIDS, and a body of scientific evidence shows that these programs significantly reduce HIV transmission among injecting drug users. Additionally, scientific studies have shown that contrary to the belief that syringe exchange programs encourage substance use, they are actually associated with stopping injecting and reduced injecting frequency, stopped or reduced reuse of needles and other injecting equipment, increased needle disinfection, increased referrals for and participation in drug treatment, and increased condom use and reduction in unprotected sex. This is because programs for increasing the availability of sterile injecting equipment are associated with increased access to informational activities aimed at reducing the utilization of non-sterile injection equipment and increasing the rate at which equipment is safely discarded. It also includes referrals to treatment and rehabilitation programs for substance use, improving access to HIV counseling and testing, and improved prevention of control of sexually transmitted infections, including HIV. As I've said before, the World Health Organization recommends syringe exchange programs as a key intervention in HIV prevention, and a guide to starting and managing needle and syringe programs is available from the World Health Organization and could provide technical support in South Africa if the committee decides to go this way, which we strongly recommend. The World Health Organization also strongly endorses the establishment of substitution therapy programs for opioid dependence, which is usually associated with injecting drug users, and which is another key addition that we recommend for Clause 22 on page 4 of our submission. Substitution therapy, usually in the form of methadone or buprenorphine, is given in reducing doses over a period of time, acts on the same receptors as heroin without having the euphoric effect, and suppresses withdrawal symptoms and opioid craving, which allows for recovering users to tackle other aspects of their lives without being debilitated by withdrawal. Substitution therapy programs have remarkably better success rates than the so-called cold turkey approach or the abstinence approach, not least because they facilitate ongoing engagement between healthcare providers and substance users, which is a vital requirement for effective rehabilitation. In addition to syringe exchange programs and substitution therapy, we also strongly recommend the need for education, training, and information sharing programs on the dangers of substance abuse, including the link between substance use and HIV and viral hepatitis, as well as HIV and viral hepatitis prevention education and overdose prevention and treatment for individual substance users who are unwilling or unable to cease their substance use. Establishment of formal harm reduction programs offer an excellent platform for such educational interventions, and we strongly recommend these. In closing, I would like to refer to a World Health Organization UN Office on Drugs and Crime statement on harm reduction to remind us of the importance of looking at scientific interventions when we make decisions around this bill. The ultimate achievement of a drug-free state is the ideal and long-term objective, but this is unfortunately not feasible for all individuals and families, especially in the short term. An exclusive focus on achieving a drug-free state as an immediate goal for all patients may jeopardize the achievement of the important objectives, such as the prevention of HIV. It is important that as we seek to institute landmark legislation to tackle substance abuse, that we do not lose sight of these objectives, especially one as important as HIV prevention in the context of the South African reality. We thank the committee again for this opportunity to make this submission, and we'll now be open for questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm sure the media and the press that will be coming on a ton of bricks. Maybe I just want to finish that by asking you to what is your point? Arguing that we must legitimize the use of drugs, and that those that are already addicted should actually be allowed to continue to do so. You're dismissive of the moral perspective, which says that actually that unsuccessful human beings are also moral, especially in the kind of society that they are, and that unsuccessful morals throw them out of on the material human needs and climate. I am not really sure what solutions to offer. It seems to be basically saying that let people continue to use drugs, but in a controlled way, let's find substitute drugs that are possibly less harmful, whether to the human body or to society in general. I don't know what this substitute drugs do or don't do to the human brain and to the human body, not only from a health perspective, but from the social in terms of the use of drugs in association or high-level crime. The cost implications, I don't know who should bear the cost and what that cost is. I can go on I don't know, do you have any comparative studies to share with us? We know that countries like the Dutch, for example, did it work. It is not encouraging the proliferation of the very same drug that we're trying to extricate our societies out. I'm not really sure whether you have any solution for an addiction to anything. Cure. Or just simply treat them. So we control them. Can you completely eliminate an addiction? And if not, scientifically that, and if scientifically you cannot, can we really rely purely on scientific intervention, scientific treatment, medical and other treatments, type of solutions to the problem? Or are we in a situation where we have to emphasize more psychological? What kind of supplement is there to strengthen the inner person to be able to rely on the mental health. But I'm sure other colleagues might want to ask further questions. Honorable Zimande, and then Honorable Lai.
Thank you, Chair. Following on from your questions and comments, I wanted to get clarity, Chair, in terms of the clause 7, that they are saying that they are opposed to clause 7. So, clarity, Chair, I mean, I was not reading, obviously, I wasn't reading the application in terms of the actual ways of what I said to ask for my own satisfaction, Chair, that they are saying that clause was done, or they're saying they're proposing inclusion of certain words and clauses of words and that type of or paraphrasing of the clauses, that Chair. So they just give us a bit of a detail in terms of what they what are they saying really by opposing clause 7 of the bill? But also, Chair, now that they seem to have been more on the health approach, to check, Chair, you know, I kept waiting to hear some comment around detoxification, and you'd remember, Chair, we had a preoccupation last week in finding some position between the health and social development in relation to treatment and detoxification, vis-a-vis the treatment centers as such. So I was keen to get to hear, you know, some if there are any they will say something about it. They may have said it somewhere. If they could just highlight that for me or reflect on that for me. And then I think I would prefer, you know, our aspiration to be the total eradication as such. It's good to train, Chair. You know, human beings must dream, otherwise if we don't dream, you know, as opposed to harm reduction. I would think, Chair, as we going through the bills and hearing the communities talking to us, one would want to hear, you know, something that talks to us, gearing ourselves or making ourselves ready to really, really arrive at total eradication. You know, something of that nature in terms of our thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to everybody. I just want clarity. I mean, I looked at the submission to the scheme. Obviously, the name of the organization is different, so all about rights. So, something has to protect the rights of those that are using drugs, which is not a bad thing, but this is worrying me. And the first one is, I think
I just wanted to check whether when the submission was written, it noted the progress, the progress that the country has made in terms of issues of intravenous drug use, because in the national strategy plan 2007-2011, and I feel like the submission wants to say that we're not doing anything. But also the acknowledgement that as a country, before we even say that we're putting this in a bill, we have to fact, we acknowledge that there's work that needs to be done, there's engagement that needs to, that there's a dialogue that must happen, because I have a little concern, and I mean, we've had this debate back and forth even in the 8th Council with different, that we can't just at this stage put in a legislation the issue of 20% the issue of a program on exchange of strangers, when actually we've not clarified in South Africa what it means for us. Because the international community sets certain standards. As member states, we must first understand what does it mean for us. And that has not been done. To say, where do you put them? How do you manage? Because in this country, the use of drugs is illegal. So how do you then manage, then make drugs, needle, exchange of needles? So you think from an HIV perspective, and that's what we would want, so that we don't, we deal with the pandemic. But for us to even at this level, when so much debate still has happened, and I think you spoke to the issue of morality, but I have also a challenge with the community that can promote health and scientific, when actually I would think that the issue of drugs is also a social issue. And you look at it, because health is about it. And so you now like narrowing into this health thing. And I think that from a human rights perspective, it would be a mistake for us to even move the health and human rights and health and scientific issues, because when you put health, science, and human rights in one sentence, they usually don't go together. They don't belong in the same sentence. So I'm a little taken aback that you chose to put the three in the same sentence. Maybe I've fallen out a bit. I need some education. But you actually channeling and you're pushing it so that, because we need social intervention on the issue, so that we begin to understand why people get into drugs in the first place. Whereas the health thing pushes us to accept that people are on drugs, give them treatment, and make them comfortable. And I have a problem, a very honest problem with that. Because I know that, and this comes back from the issue of disability, of always with health thing. And that makes people to lose out. Now we're taking us back. And we need to find social solutions and bring in the issue of morality. The last point on the recommendations around, I think it's chapter 5. I think your submission confuses me a lot. Because I thought that growth was, I mean, that section was really taking us forward. So you tend to have issues with it. Maybe I need clarity on that so that I begin to understand it.
All right. Any further questions? I'm going to make an exception. Because there are scientific issues involved, I want the Central Drug Authority, if they want to put that in the issue, that this preventive can actually respond to as well, in addition to the issues that we have presented already as academics, to also do so that the preventive has a benefit of being able to the issues that they have around. If you wish, you don't have to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I think that what we need to be absolutely sure about in our own mind is whether we're dealing with a health issue, whether we're dealing with a social issue, or whether we're dealing with a biopsychosocial issue. And I think that for clarity, we need to be very sure that we understand it as a biopsychosocial disease. You cannot separate the two. And your question about the morality is correct. The question about harm reduction is correct, because that is a health issue. But that it has to be seen in the context of a biopsychosocial condition.
and that we cannot separate the two issues. So I think that that must be a departure point that we must recognize. I think if we look at the methadone program, we also need to be very, very careful about recognizing
this presentation in your opinion, a departure from that framework.
Not now. Not from our side. Ours recognizes this as a biopsychosocial condition.
I'm saying the presentation from this presentation.
Oh.
Would you regard this presentation as a departure from the framework that you thought before in the market?
Excuse me, sir. My understanding of what was said earlier is that the emphasis here was purely on dealing with this issue of a chronic mental disease, which is correct. But the definition that is used also must include the psychosocial aspects as well, and that is the point that I would like to just emphasize. I have great sympathy with what they're saying and understand exactly what the definition is all about, but that we need to recognize that it is also a psychosocial aspect as well, and it must be seen in the context of a biopsychosocial condition. That is what I'm asking for, sir.
Okay, are there any further questions from members? Department wish to raise any issue that they would like to present a response to at this stage?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think the first question that we need to address is the issue of the moral versus scientific approach to management of substance abuse. We're going to go through the other questions later, but I'm going to ask the consultant to draft the submission and has those experiences to respond to that. To your comments.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. So, the big question for the committee is not what we think and what we feel, it's what works. And there's 25, 30 years of evidence in Cochrane reviews and the scientific literature about what approaches to drug use work around the world, both in developing countries and developed countries, for the prevention and treatment of substance use. And we may have stressed health and biomedical intervention in our presentation, but we do realize it's a psychosocial disease as well. What
do you mean by work? And work for who?
We
are sort of work for the source of science, work for users.
What we can study with, for instance, needless change in substitution therapy has been shown to reduce associated harm with drug use, such as transmission of HIV, hepatitis C, and overdose, and that it promotes the entrance of drug use into treatment, that it does not increase crime. Not increase drug use. And this is both on a societal level and an individual level. There is copious evidence from the scientific literature, from programmatic evaluations that show substitution therapy and needless change as part of a comprehensive approach to drug use, which includes psychosocial support and psychosocial counseling, is going to help to reduce drug use in South Africa, unless South Africa is different than every country on the rest of the planet. Substitution therapy also is used in dozens and dozens of countries.
That's a bit different. But every country is different. But we want to understand in the context of the social reality of South Africa. We can't divorce the moral character of the society and the perspective and orientation. It comes from a social orientation.
wax woodwork or product. Otherwise, you have something that's left aside to completely behind, and you disclose when you're home, and that's what society is not behind. You want your food.
If I may, on the mention. Just to state at the outset that we understand that South Africa has particular realities. I mean, it's got a massive HIV and TB epidemic, and it's got an increasing problem around drug use. So we're not blind to the model that there is social concern as a government towards promoting or to be seen to be promoting the use of illicit substances or illegal drugs. But what the evidence does show is that certain harm reduction programs, like needle exchange programs and substitution treatment, actually does not foster the increased use of illegal drugs. So it wouldn't be seen as promoting drug use in any way whatsoever. What it does, in fact, is a particular medical and scientific intervention that treats a medical condition or a chronic condition. And what we, unfortunately, sitting with a situation when we talked about health rights and human rights, is we do have a particular constitutional obligation to provide healthcare services and interventions that have been proven to work elsewhere internationally as well as in other parts of Africa to reduce the impact of drug use. And while we may not be able to stop drug use totally in certain sections of our communities that have already started, and while we support education and other information programs for people who have not yet started to prevent them from ever starting, with the impact that these type of harm reduction programs have shown is that they're able to reduce the number of sexually transmitted infections, they're able to reduce HIV infections. So it has other spin-offs, and the constitutional obligations that we have is to provide access to healthcare services for all people, including people who are already taking drugs. So, you know, I think it's a question of balancing that, and I understand that it's a really difficult balance that the committee is trying to face and trying to deal with. And we'll be more than happy to give the committee additional submissions on that. But we have Section 27. We have an obligation as government to objectively realize the right to access to healthcare services. It has to put in place a legislative and legal and other framework to provide these kinds of interventions and services, particularly where the services have been proven to us.
And of course, we know, right, that is a framework in the Constitution itself, within which we can interpret the extent to which the crime can be the state can be obligated to find a way to try. But yet, Ms. Sample, we have a follow-up, and I see you see the A1.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if I'm being terribly simplistic here, but the previous speaker, several times in what she just said now, has referred to health and scientific issues. I fully agree that whatever we try and do, in whatever department we work in, is to curb the spread of HIV/AIDS by whatever means possible. But my problem is with the syringe strains, et cetera, et cetera. For me, it's more a health issue than a social services issue. And I know that if we could obviously try and put any of those kind of things in whichever bill we're dealing with, whichever committee would help. But my problem is that as far as social development, I'm not sure whether we can from the department or the CDA. But that's more of a health and scientific issue as opposed to a social development issue. Maybe I'm wrong.
Our approach at this point has always been that very often, most of our legislation is multisectoral in nature. It has a multisectoral effect. Social development is in its very nature. It is a concept to lend itself to having to interact well beyond your own narrow scope and ethnic practice. So you necessarily would have to bring on board. So the children go where we have the aspects that they in the development of the population, we expect the other departments to be active. I know that health has issues before the children went through we will be calling other departments to respond to the communication.
Wait,
as a part of what we can do to help them to make a look at. I think the research in the comments are mentioning that the UN itself, the international community is going to be on the 9th and 10th of public service humanitarian. And among the top things on the agenda is to secure future connections. These programs kind of work, they work differently, but there's no international consensus. So I think that's the best thing. But also I want to just, on this point, to say to the committee, I think we need to look at South Africa's country report to the UN because it's specifically important on this matter. And we need to look at the strategic plan that talks to the issue of vulnerable groups and what the strategic plan says. Because some of these things we don't hear today, and that is what I'm trying to get at. But I don't think it would be fair on any when there's so many people who are hungry and all the challenges that we now need to, in the legislation, put issues and force governments to provide interveners, because some of the interventions don't require legislation. And in terms of the health rights of the Constitution, I mean, I don't see any part where we need brains, and I mean, it's a new program, but the department, so it requires the policy. And that is where, as a country, we need to learn to begin to differentiate, because when we legislate, we like tying government and forcing certain things, and it's not fair to a lot of other South Africans. And I mean, we need to just take deal with this area, this aspect, at the policy and program level, because that's what it is. It's an intervention strategy that's required. The Constitution says we will provide. Is it recognized as a healthcare when and when we conclude this dialogue that needs to happen in South Africa? But we can't legislate certain things because of the level of legislation. And usually, I know that communities sometimes feel that if something is mentioned in the legislation, it carries more weight. Actually, it doesn't. And it just makes a statement. And it's just something that you can use in court to vote money. But actually, it's more effective as a program. And that is where it should be. And I was just requesting that maybe we should actually depart from the issue of, because that might take our own day. And actually, just recall those documents I mentioned. And then follow the discussion and engage with South Africa's support to the UN, which is what will be discussed by the international community. And I also just have this phobia that as South Africa we tend to find ourselves at the time that where we tend to set up on things we always want to be the first one to resist and that and in the long term we're the ones that sitting with the problem. So I honestly say certain things don't belong in legislation, they belong in programs and policies, and that's where we're looking for.
Obviously stakeholders are at the limit push their own agenda, like their own issue. That's the purpose of this class. So you are perfectly in the right to argue your point. Obviously, Parliament will have to balance various
Chairman, yes, I just wanted to address the issue that you yourself raised in connection with what disease are we talking about and is it curable. And I think in support and perhaps to assist our presenters in what they are putting forward, I'd like to ask them whether they would acknowledge that this is a curable disease on condition that abstinence is the ultimate goal that we should strive for. And if abstinence is that goal, then what whatever means that we use to get to that point, be it a substitution therapy initially, then can be supported. But as long as abstinence remains the ultimate goal, and then only is the condition curable. And I would just like to know if they would subscribe to that as well. The definition that I'm referring to is our definition that we use, that substance addiction is a chronic relapsing, out of control, significantly harmful reward-seeking behavior for which there is no cure other than abstinence. And abstinence must remain the ultimate goal, and whatever means we use, be it harm reduction, substitution therapy, etc., then fair enough, then we can look at it. But then to the partial point that we need to decide before we go any further. Thank you, sir.
The department, you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say something on the approach of the deal itself. I should think that the approach of the deal is more developmental instead of being medical or using the health approach. And then in this way, we are looking to address the causal factors of substance abuse. And then we do agree that, yes, substance abuse may lead to medical symptoms or whatever, but we don't seek to address the symptoms, we seek to address the causal factors and then in the developmental approach, that is the overall
I'm not sure how accurate that communication is. I thought it was but we'll engage with you when we go into the direction. Can you quickly respond to all the other new issues that have arisen?
Okay. I want to start by responding to a few misconceptions I think that have arisen. The first is that there is no international consensus in what we have presented here today. Everything that was presented, the syringe exchange program, the substitution therapy, harm reduction services, the recognition that while abstinence might be an ultimate goal, it's necessary to accept and address the reality that this is not always the case. All of these are stances that are officially endorsed by the United Nations, by the World Health Organization, by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So these are not just isolated viewpoints that we develop on our own. And they're also based on evidence from other countries that have practiced these programs across the world, not just in evidence. The US, the UK, various countries in the world, which have had huge problems with drug use and attacks. Related to that,
if you wish to favor the topic or that would be useful. But of course, as Honorable Mokhtarman indicated, what is decided at the United Nations level does not necessarily connect to the
we will be happy to provide the committee with copies of various studies that have been done on drugs and evidence of how it works in other countries. And while Africa is not obligated to institute all United Nations recommendations, our arguments still are based on evidence, and that the approach that excludes these interventions, which is the one that has been practiced so far, has not been at the same success level that we would have hoped for. Be worthwhile to consider evidence-based scientific interventions that have worked elsewhere. To add to this, we also raised an issue which has been other people echoed of the cost and why government should be obligated to provide all these services for drug users. Another thing which will be included in the information that we send to you is a cost study that the United Nations has worked in countries which have instituted these harm reduction programs for drug users, showing that the recovery costs when you compare the cost of having these harm reduction programs as compared to the cost, you cannot consider the ratio of 1:1. You'll actually spend about a third, the cost to government will be about a third at least. That was a conservative estimate of if these programs do not succeed at all. So that, I think, addresses the issue of the cost implications. Another thing I wanted to respond to was a sentiment that came up a few times about our preoccupation with protecting the rights of drug users. Yes, we are a rights-based organization, so this is of course one of the primary goals. But all the interventions that we have recommended do not just have positive implications for the users themselves, but also for the support the good of society. As Leslie mentioned in the presentation, having these programs like syringe exchange programs and substitution therapy offer platforms for the dissemination of information to these drug users who, if we just moralize and ostracize them as immoral agents of ill, will never have that forum for engagement with services that can improve them. And by recognizing this as a medical condition, we give them an opportunity to approach the health system and to receive these interventions, which those have been excluded from previously.
And within the treatment centers,
yes, the treatment centers will provide a platform, but these are, they are, the treatment centers are focused on a specific goal and only within a specific context. The programs that we propose, such as the range exchange programs, recognize that not all users will necessarily be able to stop their substance use, and such users would not be allowed in treatment centers for individual. Whereas the range exchange program would allow for ongoing engagement between health service providers and drug users.
Just to clarify that, it's saying certain people have reached the point where they cannot be cured, and therefore they don't get admitted to the facility.
But to clarify that when we back, is there any other issue you want to? Yes, finally, your point about the legitimization of drug use. We are not arguing for the legalization or legitimization of drug use. We do acknowledge that harmful consequences, social, medical, and economic. What you are saying is that, assuming that the primary factor that propels drug use is immorality in drug use, is a very problematic approach. And we don't discount the responsibility of the individual user towards achieving a positive outcome, just like in the management of any other chronic disease, such as hypertension or heart disease or diabetes. The patient also has a responsibility to adopt certain lifestyle changes that would help recovery. But the primary approach is the recognition of the underlying medical factors that cause the user to continue taking these substances. And our submission is essentially that unless we recognize and prioritize this, it will not be successful in addressing all the other psychosocial factors that come from addiction. I think one of the other things to add on the issue.
I've asked a very specific question to the group. I've asked them, what do they mean about opposite of 7? We've had also fair engagement in terms of their approach, health and scientific-based approach, or evidence-based approach, the approach as such. They have presented measures that are opposed to process. So I asked specific question, what do they prescribe, need examples, amendments, or what? Teacher, you also tried to say to them, we need to hear proper message from the group. You know, so that we don't speculate what
I think
trying
your question is. And also the chief director from the department, responded to say that in fact there is a provision that creates a linkage between HIV and blood, contrary to what you asserted. All right. Any person whose question was not directly responded to? Going. All right. Can you get your point to those
ones? Sorry, I don't remember your question, but not the, all the others. Clause 7, we have submitted that Clause 7A should be removed from the bill based on the same argument that we have been discussing, on the dangers of adopting a moralistic approach as the primary factor in prevention programs. When you look at this, Clause 7, you'll see it talks about addressing values, beliefs, expectations. First of all, none of these can really be considered universal, so it's difficult to state around what these values and beliefs should be. And secondly, as we've said over and over again, a moralistic approach is not as effective as an evidence-based approach when it comes to the prevention and treatment of substance abuse. I will also attempt to
are you saying that all the treatment centers that are related to faith and action actually include religious programs as part of the children's program should be regarded as not meeting the standards of
children. Not necessarily. People have the right to choose what their approaches and solutions should be, and someone would want to enroll in a faith-based or a treatment center that is part of certain religious beliefs, that is fine. But what we're saying is that the legislation should not have as an underpinning tenet of prevention programs.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if you come and inbound, The companies is not going to have that problem. It's going to implement it when it doesn't take it.
Can you repeat that? I'm very worried about you talking about the issues. You've got to talk. Mike said you'll listen. I wasn't sure whether you would
listen. I'll listen, yeah.
He said you would. Because we've got to be very clear about it. We've got to be very clear. Because otherwise we won't get any medical treatment and the drug and alcohol use. And if we murky the waters now, we're going to start. That's very archaic thinking, darling. But it's all right, I'm going to do more. Okay. And all the cars registration things, everything. Yes, we should. Yes, we should. They're behavioural. No. Not we are talking to the main institute on addiction this morning and saying that they are like, please, let's hope we get it right because we really want evidence of it. But it's cool. That's where I started. But it was fueled by my own. Rather than any evidence.
The moment you use the word treat in the center,
that's the whole thing.
Are we getting it?
I will. I'm in your spot here. Let's go outward. You see, they've got teams and teams of people. Look at them. I'm their team. Just breathe. I'm going to cover that again.
They don't want to move. They don't want to move.
Yeah, but it's right. Yeah, yeah, cool. I'm game. But Lucas is already talking about it. And if we're ready to do it, then he's the one.
So you're on the question?
No. No, I think I'm on
the line. No, no, no. The drug free.
Am I doing that? Am I on the
No.
And you're okay.
Thank you.
Good day to you all, and honorable chairperson and other members. I come from grassroots, and this is where I'm bringing this for today. I'm the executive director of, my name is Christine Gordon, and I'm the executive director for Drug Free Africa, and the chairperson for the Somerset West Local Drug Action Committee. Plus the chairperson for the Western Cape Substance Abuse Forum Portfolio on Prevention and Education. Today I stand here 14 years without drugs and alcohol, but this does not give one the license to present programs on substance abuse without adequate training and study from research and scientific sources. We advocate for drug-free Africa at least 4.5 years of abstinence, and then only to be able to be to deliver programs to the people. There's so much to be considered with regards to this bill, and we are encouraged at your invitation for participation to comment. Our chairperson for the Western Cape Substance Abuse Forum, Mr. Leslie Phillips, reminds us from time to time that a mediocre teacher tells, a good teacher explains, a superior teacher demonstrates, and a great teacher inspires. And so, we pray that today we can all be inspired by this process and move for the approval of the bill so that the bill can be promulgated and we can finally move actively forward. Speaking on behalf of Drug Free Africa and the Somerset West Local Drug Action Committee, of which I'm hugely proud, it has been said that the Somerset West Local Drug Action Committee is an example to the region, metropole, and province on how an ADAC should function. Our concern is the lack of an accreditation body to accredit substance abuse awareness and training programs to schools, businesses, and communities, and also for an accreditation body for treatment, research, and community development programs in our province. So why is it necessary? It will put a stop to the mixed messaging and non-research and unscientific programs and treatment for gain being currently delivered. Our overall consensus is that the Central Drug Authority takes on this challenge by engaging each of the provincial substance abuse forum portfolios, like for instance on prevention and education, treatment, research and community development, and for them to take the reins on such accreditation. Bearing in mind that each province has its own unique dynamic, accreditation should be localized, with each portfolio assisting in the process of accreditation. So in each province, the Substance Abuse Forum would advise and participate in the process of accreditation.
It would be represented and headed up by the Department of Social Development, with representation from the Department of Health and local government, so long as it remains apolitical. Because of their intrinsic grassroots involvement, local drug action committees should be able to make recommendations to the accreditation committee at the local district office level of the Department of Social Development. Accreditation should belong to the CDA and not to a private concern, so as to assure standards control and a control over fees charged for services rendered. When there is speak of best practices, according to whom are these best practices advocated? The best practices model should be created by a group of people respected in their field who have the service excellence for the people of South Africa paramount in their hearts, and not have any personal agenda of their own. We currently have the problem of a number of opinionated and out for gain people with personal agendas advocating their idea of best practices. Best practices should result from proactive CDA, Substance Abuse Forum, Provincial Forum, think tanks. I'll repeat that. Best practices should result from proactive Central Drug Authority, Substance Abuse Provincial Forum, think tanks. There should be mandatory monitoring and evaluation of all programs delivered. This includes detailed documentation of early intervention and aftercare programs. Here, the Provincial Substance Abuse Forum, together with the LADAC, which are departmentally and community networks, can be instrumental. There should also be adequate research and science-based programs delivered to youth in safe houses awaiting trials and short, medium, and long-term prisons, with heavy emphasis being on rehabilitation from criminal and addictive thinking. The LADAC, Local Drug Action Committee, should have more executing powers and not just be sitting in our All government departments must be encouraged, together with NGOs, churches, schools, community members, and businesses, to become active members of their local drug action committee, ensuring local action on the National Drug Master Plan in all communities. Local drug action committees are powerful, grassroots, networked community committees driven by the people, for the people. This is where information is moved upstream and down. This is where one can do a comprehensive needs analysis of the communities we serve. Reintegration and rehabilitation programs to drug dealers and users on the school premises should be encouraged and prioritized, instead of these persons being expelled only to exacerbate an already chronic social problem. Ultimately, only accredited prevention and education programs and treatment services should be delivered to the people of South Africa. Thank you. Positively proactive.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Let me open it up for members. I'm curious. I'll come to you now. I'm just curious about the reason. How do we do that? These people have peddled drugs in school. Obviously, they are undesirable elements because they are the cause of the problem. And you want us to keep them in the school system. Obviously, we'll invite education next week to respond to some of the issues that are affecting them. What exactly are you proposing? How do we do that?
Currently, Drug Free Africa runs at school a program of reintegration and rehabilitation for drug abusers and dealers. And what happens is that instead of them being expelled, they're brought before the governing body with their parents. Adequate parenting programs are given, and for parents to understand their substance abuse dynamics, because some they are hugely unaware of what it's all about. And basically, the children are put through an intensive 12-week program. This program is, ones if they refuse to do the program, they become compliant to do the program. But what we found is that those very people, a lot of them have ended up becoming prefects and changing their way. In other words, they start having an influence on their school community or their classroom community, their school community, the community in their home, and the community they have in their on the outside in their social community via the change. But they've never been brought to that point of change. So giving them that chance of a point of change, that should be encouraged.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was going to be my first question. What is the success rate of this program that you are referring to? Because if you are tackling, I mean, drug dealers, you know, who profit? I mean, for selling the drugs to school kids, you know, what, I mean, the proposal that we are advancing, you again involve this structure. You know, for an example, we said that when we talk about the best practice expert, it should encourage the proactiveness of CBA, the provinces, etc. You know, so these experts, where do we get them? For example, we have structures that exist already, and we say those people are expert in this field. That is why they have been appointed to deal with this particular situation. So which are these experts? That's what we are referring to. Fourthly, you are talking about giving more power to the local action. What are the powers that we have now? Are those powers not making these local draft action committees effective? What could be the challenges that you see in terms of the power that they have, that makes them not to be effective? You know, you propose the executive power because of ineffectiveness or because of structural functions that exist between the structures and the structures and the structures. So what is the rationale for that function?
All right. Are there any other questions that other members wish? Is that another fellow? Okay. Let's proceed to hear the response.
With regards to, well, please help me, I've lost you along the way. Maybe I've done one or two, I might miss out. But with regards to the reintegration and rehabilitation, having had We've been involved with it for the last 2.5 years, and our success rate is around about 74%. But on a, going back in which, you know, I'm also advocate, you know, doing things local, because local is more better. We have to know what works here. But on an international basis, it's proven that putting people through a reintegration and rehabilitation process, you've got about a 33% chance of that person not being going back into the system. So that's behind that. Then coming back to the, you know, yes, you were right about the body there, the structures that are already there, using those structures for the accreditation, and also, you know, letting us, putting it in the ball in the CDS court to establish the function. Look, there's been talk about accreditation for a long time. And we need now to do something about it, because it just can't go on and on and on and on. Basically, what's going on out there is that people can give programs to businesses, charge 50,000 rand for a program in the Western Cape. And they can charge 50,000 rand, and the person goes in because they are human resources experts, and they're saying that they actually are accredited for doing, because of that human resources accreditation, they say that they are also accredited for doing substance abuse programs, which we know that nobody has been accredited. No training has been accredited, no programs, nothing has been accredited. So I'm just saying, let's move forward from our very basic area where we want to work from that community. We would love only research, science-based, accredited programs and treatment services being rendered to us at this level. That's what we're asking for. We can't speak the half elusive language. We just speak it as it is, as we see it. So we're asking for help with regards to this. When it comes back to the Local Drug Action Committee saying it should have more effect, Sunset West Local Drug Action Committee has got is an amazing network. Its power is in the network. But sometimes this network feels that we should be able to go and engage by having a breakfast, by daring to do things as the network of the NADAC. It will stand stronger if we were to do that. And we're finding to engage other people to come on board with us. And we're finding that although our fantastic network is the best thing since sliced bread, there is one or two things stopping us, you know, from accomplishing a better overall take in the community. We've managed to infiltrate the smaller communities around us and engage the people, because that's what we believe, that the people from those communities who are working at grassroots, who are sitting at grassroots, should be evidential and in our meeting, as well as all the departments involved. But then at times we want to go, for instance, and engage a certain sector, but we haven't got the powers or the finances or the anything to go and do this. Yes, we do team up with local government. We have made a commitment to our local government that we will do everything together.
But
I
could
mean,
you also just address yourself to the public and tell us, in your view, of the formulation of the
collection?
Part of the direction that you're proposing, silence on it, or actually hindering or kidding?
It doesn't mention anything about the, it doesn't give the NADAC that accrediting power to do things. The NADAC is only a coordinating structure. Yeah, it's only a coordinating structure. And we feel that although we're doing well at coordinating.
Are the programs you're mentioning? Something happening informally, or is it being lost by education?
Nothing happens. It's not happening formally. It happens at certain schools as a pilot project at the moment. But it's not happening formally. And we,
education, policy, and law.
They basically, there are state schools that indicated that their idea is that people should be expelled if they're found using or dealing drugs on school premises. What happens then?
I'm going to ask the central
comment on this issue. Is this bill, because one of its goals is to create synergy across land function. Now the issue of land function, how are we addressing it in this bill of law, especially in relation to the issue that has been raised today? Because we want to be ready when we meet with education. Have you really got education? And the issue of accreditation. Who does the accreditation? Who should do accreditation? What's the current legal arrangement? What? Whatever one is doing this concern.
Thank you, Chair. The issue on accreditation is the current challenge in this case. If you look at from 3, up to 3 and 4, this is what it is, the minimum amount and standard for the accreditation. And it is very much that the accreditation must be done in terms of the mathematical qualification. So the minister will give a wide point to the accreditation in consultation with the Compassion Administration Authority. So it does not necessarily...
That sounds like a human resource issue. I'm talking about accreditation of programs. It is not. Is that not what you're talking about?
What
whether
program
a program should be... Whether the classification of the program. My understanding is that the content of the program goes to the heart of the issue of the methodology, treatment or rehabilitation, whatever you call it, whatever intervention that are being proposed by them must comply with standards. And that, to me, has less to do with training, maybe packaged with training, but primarily to do with the content of the program. So I am a little bit concerned there. About the whole conceptualization that is happening there. But is there further comment on this from other, from the line function or from, yes, you've been in the department as long as I can remember. Maybe even when you should have all the institutional memory. I found you there.
Chairperson, I think we were just discussing on the concept first. She's using the word accreditation, and I think she's not referring actually to registration, because in the bill we refer to the registration of treatment centers and outpatient programs, which is purely a government function, of which we have the infrastructure in social development dealing with that. But what I suspect she's referring to is, in addition to registration, that accreditation will be provided to these programs, which we do not really make much reference to in the call. Maybe it's something to be considered. We attended a symposium not so long ago where we had lengthy discussions on possible accreditation of different programs, substance abuse programs, but I think as she was referring to, it's not really mentioned in that much detail in the book.
I'm having another concern. We have the social services professionals that regulate the human resource environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. The registration of social workers, childcare workers, and all of that. Now, are we creating a parallel dispensation for accredited workers in the field? And if so, on what national basis? I can understand that creating program in relation to the council standards, and yet in the quality of service that is trending, so that we don't have fly-by-night things. Even in education, we have fly-by-night colleges and language teachers. That kind of if we want to create a parallel dispensation, human resource dispensation, where
kind of cohort of professionals are we talking about? One, several categories, what exactly is that? CDA, first one, two comments, then we'll come back to the one, two comments.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if we have a look at 3.3 or 3 subsection 3, the Minister must prescribe conditions for the training and accreditation of persons involved with programs for substance abuse. That is what D12 actually says at the moment. The point that you're raising, though, is absolutely irrelevant in terms of a regulation which would have to be written in order to describe exactly what it is that needs to be done. And this is something that has not been taken into account yet. For example, even a medical practitioner who deals with substance abuse should be accredited knowing that he has specific knowledge around substance abuse. An ordinary medical practitioner does not know how to deal with substance abuse. And these are the sort of things that the CDA are at the moment promoting. For example, if we are going to engage in a harm reduction program in a substitution, we need to ensure that those people are...
That means for us to put a if we are going to regulate qualification for professionals in the other disciplines, whether it's health, etc., don't we actually need a formalized relationship between social development and, say, health, whether it's a mental council or a department of health? How do we accredit doctors at social development to provide treatment in relation to substance abuse? Being social workers, what do we know about that? Without consultation of the health department and the medical council, I don't understand the concept. And in any case, why create a parallel dispensation for accrediting professionals in social development? My question for them, when in fact we have legislation and a whole system established under that legislation for accrediting the various
what you're saying is correct, but you must recognise that the coordinating function of the Central Drug Authority takes into account that we engage with all of the other government departments, recognising what their needs are, and we would therefore engage with, for example, the Medical Health Efficiency Council in order to ensure that their mini drug master plan, which is developed by their department, ties in with the national drug master plan, which is envisioned by this department. And that is the reason why, for example, the question that you raised about education. In order for education to address the needs as well, we need to ensure that their mini drug master plan is in line with the national drug master plan and that it addresses the very issues that you have raised here. That is the coordinating function that the Central Drug Authority does perform, and that is the type of negotiation that we engage in ourselves with in other government departments. So that is
the... I'm already seeing with the structure. Because, you see, you seem to have centralized everything in the hands of the CDA. Alright. And its methodology is the use of a draft master plan. Now, those are not law. Those are administrative. In the law itself, interest in very thin on the very core objective, which is to create an integrated legislative framework to address the problem. Because the role of education, the role of health, the role of its other dimension, seems to have been relegated to a mere participation in the Central Drug Authority, the National Drug Master Plan, development of their own area specific plan. But as far as this law serving as a platform for integration is concerned between the roles of the different nine parties, and you're creating parallel structures along the way as well, without regard to what is already in place.
Honourable Mr. Pandit.
I was just giving the attitude
let me first get the department to comment and then you can respond, because ultimately the focus is really you presenting for us. We have asking you questions. So that's a side show for us. All right.
Thank you, Chair. First, I wanted to clarify one thing about who's supposed to do with the accreditation. In terms of this, it's not the CDA, it is the Minister of Social Development. I'm saying you cannot ignore the fact that there's another provision in another law, and that's why I'm saying that provision is not in existence. If we want to keep this provision here, then we need to take into account what other provisions. I mean, other laws.
The question we are asking: have you taken account of that other legislation, which primary role is the human rights element here? Seem to have.
grain of your very same policy and it's a similar arrangement. And that is a concern we're raising. So we made this one, the department to get back the flat on some of the issues before they come back to us with the indefinite position on this. Any other person who wants to tell us clarify this on this department?
I wanted to deal with another issue that was raised about who's going to be responsible for the program on substance abuse. In terms of 3.1, it will also be the Minister who must develop that framework. So it's not that the state is planning for the Minister that the Minister will come up with program for substance abuse.
The Minister develops a framework within the accreditation of the norm. The question was who actually implements that, who does the actual accreditation. Is this from the department? Yeah, please proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I just want to indicate that the issue of accreditation is done within the department from the section of the standards that the ones that establish the policy for cancer, for that regulate social service cancer, professional cancer, and they do together with the South African Qualification Authority, the process.
Is that the accreditation of
people, working,
of people working in this area?
Working in this field of
why don't we do it in terms of that of that authority of that while creating a different route of accreditation in this why don't we consider it that as that is that what the policy initially?
Actually, we refer to the council to work together with the South African Qualification Authority to accredit.
That is the system you want.
Yes.
All right. Yes. We'll just make sure that the law reflects that. Because at a policy level, that's in the end. All right. Is the CDA also want to respond again on this? Yes. All right. We'll leave it at that. Okay. Madam, you've heard all the arguments. Somebody who's just become a new kid that for keeping kin, and they go around and they send messages. How are we going to say stop those people because they are not accredited, and that they are actually involved in a prevention or treatment or whatever program? So what are we saying? Yes.
There are many things that I think we are trying to get on track. I feel like we speak for me. But the first thing is the people, the warm body that are working in these centers or wherever. Let's start with the centers. And now that we're even moving to the community level, stay in the community. Those warm bodies must be accredited by whoever accredits. So social worker, blah, blah, blah. And that's how we're going to have to keep it. Then you've got the actual program. If it's an inpatient facility, then the Department of Social Development must then set the norms and standards that would allow them to register the actual physical program, the activity. What do they do when they wake up? What happens when they get the job, whatever? That must be registered by social development. But social development can't develop the program because it can't be one size fits all, especially because people are addicted to different drugs. But social development must set the framework, the minimum norms and standards to say that in a facility, this is acceptable, this is not acceptable. And everybody who develops the program, whether it's an inpatient or outpatient, must develop that program in this manner. And they must have the capacity when that program comes. And I say, this is a reader, I'm establishing this center, this is what I'm going to do. Somebody in the department must be able to sit and say, does this thing, before I accredit and give it, does it fall within a particular framework? Is it acceptable, does it respect human rights, whatever the framework is going to be? And then be able to register the program, independent of the people that are going to implement the program. Then you've got your drug committees or whatever they are for, in whatever your local. Those ones we can't give them executive power because they are equivalent to your street committees, they are equivalent to your CPF. They would then be informed because, once again, it won't be a one size fits all. Because in other communities, there will be a lot of those, in others, there won't be. So you then give them at that level where you have your CPF, your street committees, so, and then they can even become a subcommittee of the white committee if drugs is a real issue in that. Whatever the structure is going to change, it can't be legislated because if we legislate, if we give them executive power that we can't guarantee because then we are prescribing, which is what we don't want to do. And that is what the issue is. And then that is all we need to do and ensure as a community that happens, that what is contained in the legislation at the end of the day.
Alright. Is there any other addition or subtraction from anybody? Alright. Yeah, somebody here is here. Do you still want to add anything?
Jefferson, just a last comment maybe from my side. I think this one of the major improvements from the Act of New Substance Abuse Law is the fact that there are quite a number of programs that we have not been regulating in the past with the existing Act, like outpatient programs, preventative programs. In the new Substance Abuse Law, I think the intention is to regulate these services. There will be better regulation of more programs with the new bill as was in the Act. So I think the speaker will find that the distribution, I think she's aiming at for better control over these programs, will naturally come from the new proposed law.
So we'll have the different categories of programs, the very services that are provided. The standard will be set in terms of what minimum qualification those that operate or provide the service must have, etc., etc. And I think the qualification part, that's where we're saying the various regulatory framework in different fields of professional tools, would have to be done. How practitioners have to be done in the context of existing regulation, control of government, and how practitioners. Because that's a core concept. And then the drug treatment becomes the ancillary function to load that onto that core. All right, I think that we've done an excellent job thus far. Thank you very much for your contribution. And this is the Eastern Cape Youth Development Board. Is the presenter here?
Yeah.
Can they come forward? Thank you. authorities have the potential to be great advocates of the prevention of and treatment of substance abuse, but there are just too many opportunities for corruption of many kinds, and it is not always easy to spot certificated candidates from the career. Substance abuse is the biggest threat to moral regeneration and thus must be vigorously fought against. We can certainly acknowledge that our communities are gradually getting submerged to this vice of substance abuse in many ways. Millions of justice systems and challenges we are faced with the expansion of Gatsby Health Club nationally are playing a big role to this vice. It is on this day that we vehemently appeal to the Department of Justice to entrench low-fine sentences for substance abuse, drugs, and tax trafficking. All spheres of government and business, particularly those of legal, should be at the front line of combating substance abuse and embrace socio-economic programs. Never been a socio-economic impact covers a multitude of predisposing factors to substance abuse, such as disruptions to family and communal life. Due to ignorance and migrant patterns at the breakdown of customs, traditions, and prevailing culture of social drinking. While many of us may not know about Gatsby Health Club, as mentioned earlier above, Gatsby Health Club is currently rendering fitness services in Tanzania, East London, and has the potential for other related services to combat substance abuse. Its vision is to align itself with nation-building programs as part of Millennium Goal development to integrate 12 programs for the mainstreaming pillar of business activities, particularly for young people in the fruit of fight against crime commission, substance abuse, and promote better lifestyle. It is therefore we deem it to come forward to recommend that government and other stakeholders to rally around this initiative. Media is also the biggest threat to the prevention of substance abuse, precisely because advertising makes people think they are popular and successful if they drink. But very less has been done to provide sufficient information about the dangers. The Department of Education and Health should be at the forefront of early prevention services by ensuring that scholars and students are provided with information regarding the danger of substance abuse. Our governmental economic environment allows for the role of all spheres of government in the bulk and very much diverse economic sectors of our economy. And this alone must be accompanied with the duty, with the main duty to ensure that both public and private houses are established and fully discharge their responsibilities. The Eastern Cape Development Board abides itself as a stakeholder and provincial youth NGO with a membership of plus minus 8,000 members, which is derived from historically disadvantage to fight the substance abuse and the use of alcohol. The organization is also working closely with the children's organization, Field and Publication Board, and we recently lobbied for partnership with the Eastern Cape Liquor Board to ensure that we reduce the use of alcohol in the township, while educating students about the other socio-economic cost of alcohol consumption and opening platforms for them to debate the concept of socio-economic cost of alcohol. Counselors may often experience frustration, anger, fear, contempt, guilt, weariness, which creates stress. However, these emotions are generated by the symptoms, inability to admit their addiction to substance abuse. We must therefore all the backup and any avenues to develop appropriate methods of working with multi-drug users, alcoholics, and describe the impact or danger that alcohol and other drug abuse can have on patients' lives. The government, Department of Social Development, faith, security, correctional services, education, health, must ensure that are playing a vital role in establishment of what water regeneration forums that must work with the NGOs and what committees, including the street committees, to ensure that people are receiving proper guidance and education. Government cannot be a Holy Spirit. Let government spearhead the formation of committees to oversee the work and ensure the fight against substance abuse and use of alcohol. Our recommendations are as follows. The government department must establish the Moral Regeneration Committee desk within the DG's unit. All municipalities must work jointly with NGOs and DSOs to establish the World Moral Regeneration Forum as the vehicle to ensure a fight substance abuse in partnership with UPF and World Committees. Political parties must compulsory introduce the substance abuse program within their masses and be used on their education as well as campaigns. The Department of Social Development must convene a national conference before the end of this year to discuss the substance abuse and the use of alcohol, ensure that it is inviting the NGOs, CSOs, and international organizations. Minister of the Department must be a champion of the program and call it the World Council Against Substance Abuse and Use of Alcohol. Parents should be obliged to, and the role to play a central role in drawing precautionary measures on socially accepted drugs, which is cigarettes, caffeine, alcohol. We call on our government to throw a weight behind our submission and work together with the Eastern Cape Youth Development Board as a stakeholder to make reality these aforementioned aspects as their implementation would accelerate substance abuse. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we want to express appreciation, especially from grassroots organizations, young people and so on, and how they have come down to the town. I know the organization at that level have to make an extra effort. All right, members.
Well, thanks, Chair. I think also to re-echo what you just said, I'd be thankful and appreciative of what the young people have done to at least make an effort to go through the bill and have the concern and take full interest on this matter. And Chair, I think for me now, you know, as you were going through the presentation, I was thinking of the previous presentation on the health science-based approach from ARASA. And that now this one, we specifically, if you look at the research recommendations that it talks about the moral base, even going further. said that in proposing that there should be given a structure, a desk, you know, and such, that this would be specific matter, but it's quite interesting how we will balance the letters out at the end of the day. And further chamber, yeah, and also, I think we also had a preoccupation last week in the informal briefing on the role of parents and the family. I'm also taking note that they also bring on board that notion that I think as a committee we need to keep that in mind. And I think the deal in somewhat does try to capture the role that the family and I think the parents would think. I just need to make that comment. I don't have questions in relation to that. I think the message is quite specific, you know, to what they are committing, and whether those some of their recommendations will be part of the deal, or you address it programmatically, you know, it's going to be left to the last more final decision of how we finalize the deal. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson, and apologies for being late, as you know, so many meetings. I want to firstly thank the Eastern Cape Youth Development Board to bring this, the report to our hearing. My concern, Chairperson, is that I read a paragraph here where it says, in practice, we have seen the failure of prevention to substance abuse by Liquor Board and SAC, South African Chairperson. The failure in that department, said Chairperson, I think the whole system falls as a failure. I think what we need to do is put the finger on the pulse, and if we can, we say let's visit these departments, the liquor board, or get them to come to us, invite them, and see what is the problem, and where assistance can be given to them. Because I think they are first and foremost people that you can tell to say, help us in preventing this sort of illegal things that's going on in the community. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much, President. No, I really want to wholeheartedly welcome the presentation from the
We will not note the mandate.
Yeah, but I want to deal with a number of issues. Maybe to get a grasp. They are proposing that government department was established the Moral Innovation Committee to secure the digital office. I want to understand what is the rationale. For an example, we have been campaigning tirelessly that they should use the electorate in those offices. That deal with number of issues that we are raising. So do you propose the structure to be parallel to use directories or to form part of the program, not use directories to combat substance abuse, because some of the programs that they were writing. I'm promoting a new structure. I know in Eastern Cape they have another dimension, they involve youth, women, and people with disabilities in that particular unit. Secondly, you are raising issues around the question of the interventionist approach in local municipalities. And you understand that we have been lobbying also tirelessly for local youth unions, possibly youth unions. So you are saying that we must establish this structure also on the local government level to be parallel to local youth unions. That could also sit in the local drug action committees for proposal. So I also want to get a clarity on that one. Secondly, you are really raising issues in terms of the testing system, lack of intervention approach, also the question of selling data to underage. Do you have a proposal perhaps of an age limit? You know, for the correct selling and also for the question of of alcohol use, not selling of alcohol to young people. Thirdly, you spoke about taverns and shippings that they run 24 hours. You have a proposed time. And maybe days, by the way, you know, for selling of liquor. You know, so we have a proposal. You know, have a little bit of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
we prudent hoping to accept it. But this is more an aspiration rather than a regulation. Remember, when you make law, you make law to provide for it. I would think that we make law to advocate for other people's good without requiring. Are we dealing with the prevention and treatment of alcohol is there anything that we need to regulate very specific in relation to the proliferation of use of hazard? And if we say we're dealing with the demand side, to what extent can we then say that prevention isn't prevention another day apart from the to what extent are we then also doing what the demand side from the prevention? This one should get hit around some of the issues. If what wants to comment on some of the issues, well and good. But I'll also be and a suppose the issue comes to so it's a follow-up question. You know, exactly what institutional arrangement do you want to create? And when we answer this question, we must be mindful of all these other things that currently exist already. The myriad of structures are all the same. For example, the identified. We want to take parallel structures, we want to load onto it. What is this we are doing? How can we do that? And we must distinguish between structures such as your local coordinating structures such as your local community for us from let me first get the department and the CBA to comment on some of the issues, and then we will have the last the focus on the presentation. CBA, you want to kick off, sir?
The response, Chairman, to your question about the alcohol being recognised as substance abuse, I think that it's quite clear that in dealing with substance abuse, that we recognise that alcohol is the primary drug of abuse in this country, and that recognition is given to it as a substance of abuse, as well as, and in exactly the same light, as other illicit substances as well, and it makes no distinction as far as that is concerned. So that is just in response to that question, sir.
It's in the legislation as well.
In the legislation as well, and also recognising, unfortunately, that alcohol is a gateway drug. And unless we deal with it in that way, we are not going to be able to fulfill our other roles in terms of dealing with other substances of abuse as well. So it is a priority area.
Okay. Mr. Combi, I'll come back to you. Let me just say, ask if the department wants to make any comments on any of the issues, please.
The policy
department. All right.
I wanted to comment on the in terms of other issues. We have raised the issue of the demand and supply side. Is the deal talking directly to substance? For example, there are also parallels that deal with the question of substance. You know, so is this deal going to talk to the because I've raised the question of age limits, I've raised the question of timing and all these things. So.
Well, where's the image? Are we basically running on parallel tracks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in response to the question, again, I'm going to be repeating what I have already said. I think we must recognize that the mandate of the Central Drug Authority is as a coordinating, has a coordinating function. And while this is not something that we ourselves as Central Drug Authority or Department of Social Development can legislate in terms of those issues like age limits and so on, it is our responsibility to advise and to make recommendations and to bring to Parliament's attention the need for changes, which is then taken up by the other departments, where the law allows them to make the regulation or to legislate. But certainly it is our responsibility to prioritise those issues that we are aware of from a grassroots level, and that's the reason why we are so emphatic about the need for working closely with local drug action committees as well as the provincial forum in order to be able to understand what their needs are, and therefore to make the recommendations to Parliament for the other departments to legislate. And that is the coordinating function that we are involved with to participate in. The Liquor Act, for example, falls under the DTI. But certainly, in our deliberations with them, we would make them aware of what the need is in order for them to be able to address it from their perspective, in order for us to be meaningful in our approaches to address substance abuse.
I actually have been mulling on whether we shouldn't actually include the DTI in the list of the centrally involved in regulating the industrial element to the proliferation of some of the things that we don't have in mind, but let's, the department, do you want to add your voice here? I must say from the outset, I really am skeptical whether this a de-integrated strategy on prevention, especially for substance abuse. This thing of loading our entire faith in the coordinating function of what is making an advisory body and not an executive body is of particular concern to me. The PDA can advise our the whole government, and they don't make decisions. And if certain obligations are not placed on certain roles that in the legislation itself, and we pin our entire faith in those organizations taking the CDA seriously and acting accordingly, we, I think, as legislators might be pinning our hopes on putting all our eggs in one basket, betting one horse, we might just make a money lose on our bets. But I'm not necessarily underestimating the coordinating function, but I'm being realistic about government and how government works, people making drugs, who are empowered to make those decisions. And if there's nothing in the door,
I think in the formal briefing last week, we gave a task to the and I hope we still remember the task check. The task was that there would be, in a way, a schedule of the supply side legislation so that we our approach, because we were informed that the deal is more on the demand side. And therefore the balance is, the weight is more on the demand side. Then we wanted to see the supply side in terms of how at some point we could work to get some approach of synergy or linkage with the supply side. And I see now from the hearings today that there has been 102 that has so far presented that to touch base with the supply side. So it still becomes critical for us that we get the schedule on the supply side so that somehow we find the approach to this deal that would assist to make some linkage or some framework for of synergy between the supply and the demand side.
And of course, we don't necessarily bringing in the supply side as much, but I think that where synergy needs to be created, unless it's actualized, can be that as an ideal that
thank you, Chair. Maybe starting with the concern of the integratedness of the deal with other departments, I think maybe one can maybe refer to the minister making contact with any relevant minister established program for the prevention of substance abuse. And then, currently, there is a advanced laboratory that is responsible for coordinating all the efforts to deal with the problem of substance abuse. Again, the another structure that the Department of Social Development has developed is the National Steering Committee on the Tumaja Program. The Tumaja Program is a government program to deal with, to create awareness and educate the young people on the sexual threat to substance abuse. And then that National Steering Committee has got a bunch of programs that include the healthy lifestyle and the youth from educated under to the care. That program that they've just referred to. And then we have the Department of Sport and Recreation in the committee. We also have the Department of Arts and Recreation presenting a program there, and the Department of Social Development, Education, and various other departments involved. And then that is just special. There's a Kimoja integrated strategy that the Department of Development to bring all the efforts of this department in the Kimoja awareness and education program. But within that special, the awareness of the integratedness, the issue of integratedness is already being addressed. And then the schedule that you had last week, we are busy providing the schedule, and I should think what is happening, we'll be able to present the schedule.
It was definitely have it by Wednesday next week, when we have scheduled the actual line function.
So maybe to address something on the issue of the recommendations by the youth from the Cape again. They requested me for the national conference before the end of this year. Chairs, maybe for their information, we hold biannual summit on the same subject of substance abuse, and then we are planning for another conference to take place, summit to take place next year. So I should think if they can give our and the CDA their details, we'll be able to invite them to the same summit.
What's your final words to all that said? Some were just comments and observations. Feel free to respond to any of those questions.
Thanks a lot. My name is Edward Sardin. I'm interested to give a clarity on the issue of moral generation. As the youth development board, allow our government to operate in a parallel structure. But we recommend here to the Portfolio Committee of Social Development that the youth tourism state is all important, but the clarity around that and everything. We therefore request that they must ensure that within the Director General of the Social Development, there is a moral intervention unit that operates in linkage with the municipalities around the country. That will make the work easier instead of using parallel structure. By doing so, it would mean that the formation of a wide moral regeneration forum, while there is a wide youth forum and a wide committee, it would mean now the program will reach the TVF quite quickly than the program remaining in the territory in the territory under the youth staff. There is evidence that we have the provincial youth commission, and if you look in Eastern Cape, in the office of the premier, there is a program of substance abuse. But if we can now send directly the program to our ensure that not only do the civil society organizations and NGOs and also the directory also direct to the what youth committee, to the what committee, that is not parallel. Instead, to the solution. I am famous on the intervention where there is a local youth unit. The program must be within that local youth committee. That won't be a parallel. On the issue of the age limit, we are supporting of the organization called Resentment by one of the organizations. That shipping must close on Sunday. And we propose here that the shipping must ensure that on Sunday are not operating. And also the issue of the age limit.
Yeah, let me just also indicate that when it comes to matters that may not necessarily be appropriately regulated in the nation, one of the things that we can do is in our scope, when we pass which will then be forwarded to the government after Parliament has approved. So in that way, for example, we think that certain laws will need to be reviewed to accommodate certain issues that it has raised for what we need to achieve in this process. And that would be the secondary, the fallback condition that we have. Because the first surprise. How do we give up this goal as it stands before us? But that is the chief primary objective of ensuring integrated and coordinated response to the problem ahead. Taking on board the role of all stakeholders, both in the public and the private sector. That objective must find clear expression. Look at the children for a whole big chunk. Deals with the role of justice. Create children for deals with the entire regulatory framework on the right of children, which is a narrative that can't be passed by the government. So we're not shy to deal with issues that raise force. Where else is going to be done? Trading industry is not neither of the other portfolio companies. This is the basic support, the prevention and treatment of youth. It means it is the central that must achieve. If we fail here, then we will just forget. Revenue services will pass a law that deals with controlling the illicit importation of the illicit substances, etc. But that's the only aspect we'll cover. They will not deal comprehensively with the overall government strategy of the nation. So we here should make sure that what they're trying to do there is brought to bear. All right, on that note, we would like to thank the Intercape Development Board for their efforts and the very useful reaction to our program. And thank you very much. join. He'll give us the details about lunch.
Because of the issues taking place this afternoon, I'm not quite sure if they need for lunch. So the eating a lunch outside. I just want to appeal that the members of Parliament proceed first, then all of us can then follow the lunch outside where they are seated. Thank you.
I hope it's enough for everybody.
I need a long holiday.
Well, that's where I'm going.